Today's show is brought to you by Amazon through the HT Guys link. The whole world of Amazon is available at htguys.com/Amazon.
Welcome to the HD TV podcast featuring the HT Guys, Ara Derderian and Braden Russell. Now, the HD TV podcast.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the HDTV and Home Theater Podcast. This is episode 741, May 27th, 2016. And a remote record for us again because of travel situations. But hopefully everything comes together well.
Yeah.
This might be, Ara, the most geographically dispersed we have been for a remote record.
No, because I was in India once, and that's further east than where I'm at now.
Oh, okay.
But
all right, so this is close. A close second.
Yeah, so I'm in Dubai, and my audio may not sound that good because I'm using the microphone that are on my headphones. The mic that I had brought with me never made it, nor did any of my baggage or any of my clothes. I actually had to go to the mall today to go buy some clothes.
So, that's terrible.
Yeah, it sucks. I didn't have. So they had to set me up a shave kit and toothbrush and all that stuff. But it actually sucks. I did laundry. You know, it was just not good. And I was in line at immigration, and I got free Wi-Fi at the airport. And I see an email from KLM. I look it up. Says, "Oh, your bags aren't here." I'm going, great. So yeah, it's not been good.
So do they know where your bags are, or are they just like permanently lost?
Nope, they found them, and they'll be here tonight. So I'm recording at 5 o'clock in the evening. There's only one flight that comes in from Amsterdam. It gets in at about midnight, and that's about, 1 o'clock is when my bags will show up. Now, I've got a meeting tomorrow that I have to be dressed for. So if for whatever reason it doesn't show up, I got to go back to the mall and actually buy like work clothes.
Nice. Yeah, that's happened to me before too, where I showed up at the meeting wearing what I wore on the airplane because my bags didn't make it, which wasn't ideal. I was in like jeans and a t-shirt, but I guess
I may go that route,
not showing up for the meeting.
I may go that route, but we're working with Emirates Airlines and they're very formal, so I don't know how that'll work. But anyway, so enough of my woes. How are things in California?
Nice. No complaints here. The weather's nice.
And you have all your clothes.
And my clothes are here, so
all right.
Yeah, so. I guess there are worse things than losing the microphone, right?
Yeah,
not having clothes is exactly. Probably worse, but hopefully everything comes together for you.
All righty, so let's get started with the show. And first, our NPR donation segment. You can help out the show by doing your Amazon shopping at htguys.com/Amazon. Anything you purchase there will go to help offset some of the cost of the show and some of the things that we buy, and just actually just help Braden and myself out. You can also support the show by going to patreon.com/hdtvpodcast and donating a little bit there. A few listeners have, and we greatly appreciate it. Donate 25 cents a show or $1 a month, $1 a show, whatever you want. We appreciate every bit, helps. And lastly, Caff Pals, or our coffee metaphor, and Caff Pal is like a highly caffeinated drink that Abby Shuto drinks on NCIS. And if you do buy a Caff Pal, you get a shout out. Anything you want, I guess, as long as it's legal, we'll be more than happy to.
Legal.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to say go to the corner of whatever and Steve there will sell you a dime bag. We're not going to do that. So, but we had no Caff Pals this week. So with that, I guess we'll get into email.
Yeah, dime bags or otherwise. This week, huh? All right. First email is from Alan in Oakton, Virginia. He says, with respect to recording Netflix, I have a solution. And that solution is PlayOn. PlayOn can record Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Video, Vudu, along with any pay cable channels and many more, as long as you have a subscription. He says, I have my PlayOn folder mapped in Plex, and PlayOn saves the files in the proper format so that Plex automatically pulls them in. You can copy them to whatever device you want. All you have to put up with is the splash screen at the beginning of each recording that shows your PlayOn username, your IP, and the date recorded. PlayOn is not that expensive, and they usually have a sale once a year. And I think gosh, if you go way, way back in our HDTV podcast archives, we have a Play On review. I mean, it feels like that was like 5 or 6 years ago, but yeah. It is a pretty cool product. We haven't updated the review in a long time, so it's probably better than it was when we used it. But it's an interesting concept. It's like a DVR for your streaming content. And when we used it, it worked pretty well.
Yeah, you know, and thinking about it, it would have been good to have some more content on the airplane with me. So I'll have to take a look at it if I travel again. But, you know, with me, Braden, I won't travel again for another 3 years on business. It just kind of all piled up at one time for me. All right, then Dan has a comment about Amazon Fire TV. Heard you talking about the Roku and similar set-top boxes. I really do like the Amazon Fire TV, but it has a serious omission. It does not support HD video from any ultraviolet source. They never had Vudu and do not have Flixer, but for some reason, they never had Vudu and do have Flixer, but for some reason removed the ability to play HD. The Roku is the only box at Amazon that has Amazon Prime and Vudu, and I cannot seriously consider another brand until they do. And that's a good point about the ultraviolet. Vudu is, I guess they call it a locker for your ultraviolet content. And that's really cool. Because every now and then I will get a Blu-ray that does not have a digital download for Apple, but it does have an ultraviolet download. So it would be nice to have some way of being able to play that back on one of those set-top boxes.
Yeah. All right, and next email or last email is from Ed about cable card. He says, hey guys, can I just say that for me, cable card has never lived up to the promise. MSOs were forced to do it, and this is the kind of thing that helps along the open set-top box initiative with the FCC. Case in point, TiVo Bolt. And he says, I have Aeris boxes now with Rovi clients. They are painfully slow. While generally reliable, there are some functions which are awful. In the case of DLNA playback, caused the box to crash. So, enter the Bolt. I listened to your review and decided to call my cable company about cable card costs and install. Cable cards for Ed cost $10.45 a month per card. He says it's higher than I wanted, but wait till you hear about install. They charge $75 an hour with a half-hour minimum, and their guidance was allow 2 to 3 hours for install with a new product such as the TiVo Bolt. So with $23.90 a month for the WHDVR single box versus TiVo at $25.40, which is the $10.45 for cable card plus $14.95 for TiVo, I can never recover the install or purchase price. That's crazy. I haven't heard of anybody charging that much for a cable card. And then the install, I guess, is just because their installers, similar to the Cox installers here, have no idea what they're doing with the TiVo, and they probably ended up spending hours on site like they did with me, and they wanted to recover that cost somehow.
Well, did they charge you per hour, Brayden?
That is not cool.
Brayden, did they?
No, they didn't charge me at all. Huh?
Yeah, I think, that's just a way to discourage you from using it, is my guess.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I had three different guys come out and, you know, spend a few hours here at the house, but I didn't get a bill for that at all.
Yeah, but everyone in the Cox cable system will see a dollar increase per month because of it.
Yeah, that's fine with me. I mean, distribute that cost across everybody, I'm fine with it.
No, a dollar per subscriber.
I know. I'm not paying for it. That's okay. Cool.
All righty, let's move on to email. That's right, because you have a cable card. Your costs are fixed, right, until they raise your price. All righty, first email news. Samsung is gathering information from TV networks and discussing its options for entering the online TV streaming service business, according to sources. If the company chooses to go ahead with the streaming app for internet-connected TVs and smartphones, it may offer the app worldwide. I think, based on the players, Braden, that are trying to get into this, it won't be long before you'll have full online streaming from multiple sources. Because you can get it from Sling.com, and then we just talked about Sony has it on their PlayStation, and now that's open up to various other platforms as well. It won't be long till Apple gets in this, and Amazon for that matter as well, and you're going to see you're going to see more competition in the space, which should help keep prices down.
Yeah. And Hisense has rolled out a major portion of their 2016 TV lineup, including a pair of H8 series HDR-enabled 4K Ultra HD TVs that it calls disruptively priced. The two TVs are the 50-inch 50H8C at a suggested $599 retail price and the 55-inch for $699. That's the 55H8C. Both feature open HDR high dynamic range technology, although Vizio has begun offering 4K TVs in the same two screen sizes at the same price as Hisense. The Vizio models lack HDR and lack over-the-air TV tuners. The two H8 models play HDR video content from USB connected devices and from 4K Blu-ray players connected via HDMI 2.0a. They also feature full array local dimming with an unspecified number of dimming zones. The HDR range in nits also wasn't disclosed. Both smart TVs feature 4K streaming of Netflix, Amazon Prime, YouTube, Ultraflix, and Tune Googles. Neither comes with pre-installed HDR streaming services.
All right, so Hisense, you know, that I think they, when we saw some of their products, we never considered them to be the highest quality. It was kind of more like you got the specs and the features, and it was low cost. Now with HDR, I think it kind of goes to what we were saying a long time ago. The best standard definition couldn't compare with the worst HD TV. You know, back when we first were getting our HD TVs, we would say that. And now I believe what will end up happening is 4K with HDR, and of course HDR content, will be better than, you know, high quality 4K without HDR. I should have said like average 4K with HDR will be better than high quality 4K without HDR.
Yeah, and you say average 4K, that's funny. Well, yeah, I think you're right.
DTS PlayFi wireless multi-room audio technology is coming to more brands and getting some new features. Three more companies, Vox International, Autonomic, and SVS, have signed on as partners, according to DTS, but ship dates haven't been announced. SVS is switching from Qualcomm's AirPlay wireless multi-room technology, which SVS previously planned to offer in 2015. Separately, DTS added iHeartRadio to the list of streaming services available through DTS PlayFi app, and it enhanced high-resolution audio support with a new critical listening mode. The new mode enables native rendering of high-resolution files up to 96 kHz and 24 bits with no downsampling or network synchronization adjustments, so the audio files will retain their original audio integrity. And previously, PlayFi systems downsampled high-res files to CD quality for transmission over Wi-Fi or Ethernet. Brands offering desktop, tabletop speakers, and other products with PlayFi include Polk Definitive Technology, Fusion Research, Rensound, DTS Forest Brand, Paradigm, Martin Logan, Anthem, Macintosh, and HP for tablets. And brands planning on PlayFi products include Arcam, Asus, Clips, Rotel, Sonos Faber, Dish, Wadia, and Acer. So we did a feature on PlayFi, I don't know, maybe a few months ago, five, 6 months ago. And at the time, I really hadn't heard that much about it. With some of these companies, it seems a little more on the higher end. Do you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of the products that you would want were in that brands planning PlayFi products, right? Right. Clips and Rotel and right. Sonos Faber Dish. So it seems like it could be a very promising platform, but it's just not quite there yet.
All right, and before we get on to our main feature, when I interviewed Gary Yakubian of SVS, he mentioned that SVS was selling a subwoofer isolation system. And a lot there, what you want to do is not have your subwoofer on the floor, because a lot of the energy will go into the floor and it will have negative effects to your subwoofer. And many years ago, we talked about the Subdude, and it was a platform that you would place your subwoofer on. And in my case, it was a 15 by 15 platform, and it would reduce structural vibrations through walls, floors, and ceilings. And as a result, your bass improved. It got tighter, and it just sounded better. Now, I have these in my house. Braden, are you using the Subdude or any kind of isolation system?
I am not, because of the location of the subwoofer. I can't. It's basically in a cabinet, and I don't have the space for it.
Okay.
But,
yeah,
so I don't have the space for a Subdude, but the SVS SoundPath I might have space for.
That's what I was just going to get to. One of the knocks on the Subdude is the platform. It may be, you know, there's different sizes, but there's not one necessarily that's the exact size of your subwoofer. And as a result, it could end up taking up more floor space, or in Braden's case, it won't fit. But then SVS came up with the what they're calling the SoundPath subwoofer isolation system. It costs $50, and it consists, I'm going to use shock absorbers with air quotes, like four shock absorbers that you attach to the bottom of your subwoofer. So you take off the feet that the subwoofer came with, and then you put these on. And if there isn't, they have like six different sets of screws in there, so one of them is going to work. And apparently when we talked to the people at SVS, they said this system will fit like 95% of the subwoofers. And I used it with the subwoofer, the DIY subwoofer that I built from Parts Express. And it fit perfectly. And not only did it fit perfectly, it sounded better than when I had the Subdude. I actually noticed the subwoofer, the bass got tighter, and things that were rattling or vibrating, now it doesn't always do that, but when there's like certain notes, stopped. And I'm really happy with it. It took about 5 minutes, and it could be done pretty much by anybody with a screwdriver. It's all it takes. But another big plus is from the aesthetics committee, because my wife loved how that platform was gone, because she was a little bit concerned about how big the subwoofer was. And the platform just made it look bigger than it actually was. And when I put these feet on there, now you're looking at just the actual area or volume of the subwoofer. And that made a big difference. And my wife gave a thumbs up just for that alone. And Braden, I guess this will end up helping you as well, because now you can get these and hook it up to your subwoofer.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it definitely looks like you haven't modified the subwoofer at all. So you add this isolation system to it, but you can't tell that it's there. So all you get, there's no aesthetic downside, and it's just a sound upgrade, right? It's a pretty cool product.
Yeah. So in my case, it was a tighter bass, cleaner. Bottom line is the SVS SoundPath isolation system actually performed better than what we thought was an already good product, which was the Subdude, and it does cost slightly less. So if you're spending $500 or more on a subwoofer, I think spending $50 to get the best performance out of it isn't asking too much. And now, one of the things that I did some research in this, if you're losing some of the audio into the floor, some of the energy into the floor, you now have to crank up your bass so you get the levels that you want. So with this, it's more efficient. So you can actually, when you recalibrate your system, you'll probably find that you can lower the volume of the subwoofer and still get the same level out of it. So it just makes it more efficient. Not that that's a big deal. I just think efficiency is always good.
Yep. All right. So jumping into the main feature for today's show, Google has dabbled in the home theater and home automation arenas for quite a while, going all the way back to the Logitech Review and Google TV back in 2010. And there are actually a few devices before that failed experiment as well. We reviewed the Logitech Review on episode 452, so you have to go way back in the archives to find that. But even with the success of the Chromecast, still kind of feels like Google's just toying with us. But that could change soon. Some of the announcements at this year's Google I.O. conference were pretty exciting, very promising. Plus, they have something called Project Aura. So how could we not talk about Google I.O. when they have something that they've called Project Aura? I mean, if it's named after one of the HT guys, we got to talk about it, right? Yeah,
that's been around for a while. I always get a kick out of it. All right, so perhaps the most relevant announcement to our show and everyone listening was the Amazon Echo competitor, simply called Google Home. The device itself was the big announcement, but they followed up with some with an expected delivery date of later this year. However, they didn't specify a price. The man behind the project, Mario Queers, I don't know, how can you say that? Queiroz? Can you take a shot at that?
Yeah, that works.
Q-U-E-I-R-O-Z. There we go. Also happens to be the same man who launched the other successful home product in the Google portfolio called the Chromecast. Google Home is exactly what you'd picture. And if you were told someone was going to launch an Echo competitor, oh my goodness, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time. Let me start to do that sentence again. Google Home is exactly what you'd picture if you were told someone was going to launch an Echo competitor. It's a small speaker, and you plug into the wall, and it's always listening. Far-field microphones that can hear you from across the room. And, you know, before we go on, that was one of the things I really do like about the Echo, is how far the microphone will pick you up. It's also maybe a bad thing if you want some privacy, because it's always listening. But I'm surprised at how far away I can ask the Echo to do something, and it'll do it.
Yeah, and just like the Echo, Google Home will answer your questions, play your music, and control some of your home automation components. Of course, Google tells you that their device is better at most of those things than the Amazon device, but, you know, they got to say that. And while the Echo isn't great at multi-room, Google Home is designed with multiple rooms and speakers in mind from the start. It's built on the Cast standard, so you can talk to any speaker and tell it to play music on other speakers, just like you can with Google Cast Audio. We aren't sure if it'll support synchronized music in multiple rooms, but if it doesn't at launch, we can't imagine it would be too far off for them to add that feature.
And, you know, I keep interrupting this, but that is one of the things I'm not happy about the Echo, that it is not synchronized. And sometimes I'll say something and one of the other Echoes will pick it up, and it will start just yammering away. And I would be like, it says, look, I got this. I've got a really strong signal. You know, your signal wasn't as good, so I'm closer, and I'm going to take over. And likewise, it'd be great if you can synchronize music through the rooms. So I'm hoping Google, in their implementation, they get that going. All right, so Google Now is getting an upgrade to the Google Assistant, to the new Google Assistant, in an effort to take on Siri, Cortana, and Alexas of the world. The unique feature that sets Google Assistant apart from the rest is the ability to remember prior questions and apply context to new questions. For example, you could say something like, show me what action movies are playing in my area, followed by a statement like, I'm a fan of everything with anything with vampires in it. And to further narrow the search, and that sounds more intuitive than most of the other digital assistants on the market right now, and could have a nice tie-in with the voice-controlled home automation, a Google Assistant on your Google Home device, and that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it would be pretty cool to be able to, a lot of times, like, I'll ask Siri a question, and then Siri doesn't quite get it, and I have to repeat the entire question, and then keep, you know, trying to figure out what to say to get Siri to understand what I'm telling it, or the same thing with Alexa. But evidently, Google Assistant, you'll be able to just keep talking to it, and it's going to remember what you've said in your prior questions and just, I guess, apply that to, it's almost like having a conversation with the device. I don't know if it's going to work, but it sounds like it'd be pretty cool.
And then become self-aware.
And then applying that to home automation, where it's like, hey, you know, dim these lights. You know, I didn't mean those lights. I meant these lights. And yeah, I don't know. It could be, it's like Jarvis, I guess. It'll actually interact with you. I don't know.
I want to hack my system so I can say Jarvis to it. I know there's some hacks that let you do some stuff.
Yeah, they added a third, because it's always been, what, Amazon and Alexa, right? I think they added Echo, so you can talk to it just by calling it Echo now. But they didn't add Jarvis yet. All right, so Daydream. Farewell, Android VR. Hello, Google Daydream. It's quite similar in approach to Google Cardboard in that Daydream is built by Google, but it's up to developers to create the apps, games, and experiences that really make it compelling for consumers. At Google I.O., they showed off sketches of a reference VR headset and a remote. It's kind of reminiscent of the Nintendo Wii, that together will provide motion-controlled gaming and simple user interface navigation while you're using the Daydream headset. Google also announced that several phones that are coming out will be Daydream compatible, coming out from companies like HTC and Samsung, and those should hit the store shelves later this year. So this is just kind of piling on to all of the momentum around virtual reality. Google's now firmly, as of Google I.O. this year, in that game as well.
All right, so Project Aura that Braden talked about, what is that actually? And for those of you who don't know, it's actually pretty cool. The idea is a totally modular cell phone. It's a marriage of cell phones and Legos, if you will. Your phone, instead of being one solid piece of electronics, is a bunch of smaller pieces of electronics that you put together, and then where each small piece is replaceable. So you can buy a phone, which is basically all the parts that you pre-assembled, or just go out and buy the parts that you want and build your own. And that is kind of like the DIY speakers that we're talking, but for phones, that's kind of interesting. So would they have cases for it and stuff too?
I would assume so, yeah. I mean, each of the pieces are probably similar, from the pictures I've seen, similar shape and size, so that once you assemble it, a case would fit. I don't know. It's probably an interesting problem to solve, of making sure that once you build the phone, it is the same form factor, so it would fit in a case. That's a great question. I don't really know. But you know, if you're out there and you've been sitting at home watching TV, you see a commercial about a new phone with a super awesome camera or crazy long battery life or a killer screen, wished you had that phone, but the one you just bought a couple months ago doesn't have that, you would be all set. With Project Aura, it solves that for you. If you want to add a better camera, go out, just replace the module that has the camera in it, and you're done. There's no reason to replace the whole phone. You want a better battery, louder speaker, go for it. I think that's pretty freaking cool, because I mean, you go out and buy a phone and it's literally out of date a couple months later when someone announces, hey, we have this phone that does this that yours doesn't do. Now all you have to do is just pull that part off, go buy the new one, put that one in, and there you have the latest and greatest. It's a great idea.
It's a great idea. The only problem is those kinds of ideas, they've used them in the past, they never come together the way that you would want them to. You know what I mean? It just like, I'm trying to think of products that were like that, but I just kind of get the feeling that it's still not going to be implemented the way you would want if it were just put together from from the factory.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like I don't know if people still do it that much, but the old days of, you used to go out and buy all the parts for your computer and build your own computer, right? You'd buy a motherboard and processor and hard drive and memory and all that, and kind of assemble everything and get a cool case that had like neon and Windows and stuff, like Windows in the case itself, not Windows, the operating system. But you know, in that idea of, hey, I'm going to build the exact right computer that I want for me, there is a lot more kind of, I guess, what's the right word for it? Frustration along with that, because it doesn't always, if you put it together and hit the power button, it's not going to work the first time, right? You got to get drivers installed and you have to make sure that everything is working together. Whereas if you were just to go out and buy a computer from HP or Dell or whatever that they assembled for you, you plug it in, you know, 99 times out of 100, it's going to just work.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. There's going to be a lot of kind of kinks in the system when they first release this stuff. Hopefully over time, it'll smooth out. But yeah,
or it's probably going to be. Or if you're the type of person who likes working with that kind of stuff, you'll just enjoy it anyway. So it's nothing that, you know, like my wife or your wife would want to do, but it may be something you and I would do just kind of for fun.
To tinker? Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Also at the I/O conference, Google announced that Project Aura is coming out of the cool futuristic idea phase and will be making it into your hands in the very near future. The technology will release to developers in the fall of 2016 with a consumer release plan for the spring of 2017. And they're giving plenty of time between developer releases and consumer releases to make sure that they have a good idea of what kinds of modules developers will want to create and what kinds of modules consumers will want to buy. But bottom line, the Google Lego phone concept could be on store shelves in less than a year.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that I think that I've seen like Kickstarter campaigns and other things talking about sort of this modular phone concept that have never really materialized. So if Google's actually able to get this out into the consumer market in less than a year, that in itself is a giant feat. Maybe it won't work. Maybe it's going to be too frustrating and you know, you'll plug in the new module and it's not going to work with everything else. All of a sudden, instead of having a louder speaker, your speaker's not going to work. But the idea that they're moving in that direction, I think is pretty cool. And I would love for other devices like, you know, home theater receivers to be a similar concept to where, you know, I don't have to go out and buy a whole brand new receiver to get, let's say, what, like the new Dolby codec or the new DTS codec. There'd be a replaceable module I could put in that gets me that, and I don't have to buy the whole thing over again. And if more devices were kind of built this way from the beginning, I think a lot more people would have newer upgrades faster. But I mean, your point of it doesn't always work the way you would hope it would work when you do it that modular is probably why, you know, most companies aren't trying it.
Yeah.
I think, who was it, like Marantz or somebody had a receiver that was sort of built like that. It was kind of built on blades, cards that you would slide into the back to give you different functionality. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where it went. I think it kind of disappeared, probably because it was tough to get all of that to just work seamlessly out of the box.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll wait and see.
All right, so that's it for today's show, and hopefully everything came across well. It seemed to me like it was pretty smooth, regardless of or despite the geographic distance between us.
Yeah, there was a few glitches in the audio, but I think I hope our listeners will understand. We don't do this that often, and when we do, if you guys can bear with us, we greatly appreciate it.
And thank you for listening. Go watch some HDTV,
and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the HDTV and Home Theater Podcast with Ara Derderian and Braden Russell. If you're not already a subscriber, find the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast aggregator. In social media, look them up on Facebook and on Twitter at HDTV Podcast. To contact Ara or Braden for questions and feedback, email htguys@htguys.com, and they're on the web at htguys.com. Again, be sure to subscribe, and thanks for listening to the HDTV and Home Theater Podcast. We'll be right back.